Chapter 31. Pedro Vincente set down his beautifully restored DC-3 transport onto the runway of the airport at Harlingen, Texas. He taxied the 55-year-old aircraft down to the front of the U.S. Customs Service hangar and shut down the two 1,200-horsepower Pratt & Whitney engines. Two uniformed customs agents were waiting when Vincente opened the passenger door and stepped to the ground. The taller of the two, with red hair mussed by a breeze and a face full of freckles, held a clipboard above his eyes to shield them from the bright Texas sun. The other was holding a beagle by a leash. "Mr. Vincente?" the agent asked politely.
"Pedro Vincente?"
"Yes, I'm Vincente. We appreciate your alerting us of your arrival into the United States." "Always happy to cooperate with your government," Vincente said. He would have offered to shake hands, but he knew from previous border crossings the agent steered clear of bodily contact. He handed the red-headed agent a copy of his flight plan. The agent slipped the paper onto his clipboard and examined the entries, while his partner lifted the beagle into the aircraft to sniff for drugs.
"Your departure point was Nicoya, Costa Rica?"
"That is correct."
"And your destination is Wichita, Kansas?"
"My ex-wife and my children live there."
"And the purpose of your visit?"
Vincente shrugged. "I fly from my home once a month to see my children. I'll be flying home the day after tomorrow."
"Your occupation is farmer?"
"Yes, I grow coffee beans."
"I hope that's all you grow," said the agent with a tight-lipped grin.
"Coffee is the only crop I need to make a comfortable living," said Vincente indignantly.
"May I see your passport, please?"
The routine never varied. Though Vincente often drew the same two agents, they always acted as if he were a tourist on his first visit to the States. The agent eyeballed the photo inside, comparing the straight, slicked-back black hair, partridge-brown eyes, smooth olive complexion, and sharp nose. The height and weight showed a short man on the thin side whose age was 44. Vincente was a fastidious dresser. His clothes looked as if they came right out of GQ. Designer shirt, slacks, and green alpaca sport coat, with a silk bandana tied around his neck. The customs agent thought he looked like a fancy mambo dancer. Finally, the agent finished his appraisal of the passport and smiled officially.
"Would you mind waiting in our office, Mr. Vincente, while we search your aircraft? I believe you are familiar with the procedure."
"Of course." He held up a pair of Spanish magazines. "I always come prepared to spend some time." The agent stared admiringly at the DC-3.
"It's a pleasure to examine such a great old aircraft. I bet she flies as good as she looks."
"She began life as a commercial airliner for TWA shortly before the war. I found her hauling cargo for a mining company in Guatemala. Bought her on the spot and spent a goodly sum having her restored." He was halfway to the office when he suddenly turned and shouted to the agent, "May I borrow your phone to call the fuel truck? I don't have enough in my tanks to make Wichita."
"Sure, just check with the agent behind the desk."
An hour later, Vincente was winging across Texas on his way to Wichita. Beside him in the co-pilot seat were four briefcases stuffed with over $6 million. Smuggled on board just prior to takeoff by one of the two men who drove the refueling truck. After a thorough search of the plane, and not finding the slightest trace of drugs or other illegal contraband, the customs agents concluded Vincente was clean. They had investigated him years before and were satisfied he was a respected Costa Rican businessman who made a vast fortune growing coffee beans. It was true that Pedro Vincente owned the second largest coffee plantation in Costa Rica. It was also true he had amassed 10 times what his coffee plantation made him,
as he was also the genius behind a highly successful drug-smuggling operation known as Julio Juan Carlos. Like the Zolars and their criminal empire, Vincente directed his smuggling operation from a distance. Day-to-day activities were left to his lieutenants, none of whom had a clue to his real identity. Vincente actually had a former wife who was living with his four children on a large farm outside of Wichita. The farm was a gift from him after she begged for a divorce. An airstrip was built on the farm so he could fly in and out from Costa Rica to visit the children while purchasing stolen art and illegal antiquities from the Zolar family. Customs and drug enforcement agents were more concerned about what came into the country rather than what went out. It was late afternoon when Vincente touched down on the narrow strip in the middle of a cornfield. A golden tan jet aircraft with a purple stripe running along its side was parked at one end. A large blue tent with an awning extending from the front had been erected beside the jet. A man in a white linen suit was seated under the awning beside a table set with a picnic lunch. Vincente waved from the cockpit, quickly ran through his post-flight checklist, and exited the DC-3. He carried three of the briefcases, leaving one behind. The man sitting at the table rose from his chair, came forward, and embraced Vincente.
"Pedro, always a delight to see you."
"Joseph, old friend, you don't know how much I look forward to our little encounters."
"Believe me when I say I'd rather deal with an honorable man like you than all my other clients put together."
Vincente grinned.
"Fattening the lamb with flattery before the slaughter?"
Zolar laughed easily.
"No, no. Not until we've had a few glasses of good champagne to make you mellow."
Vincente followed Joseph Zolar under the awning and sat down as a young Latin American serving girl poured the champagne and offered hors d'oeuvres.
"Have you brought choice merchandise for me?"
"Here's to a mutual transaction that profits good friends," Zolar said as they clinked glasses. Then he nodded.
"I have personally selected for your consideration the rarest of rare artifacts from the Incas of Peru. I've also brought extremely valuable religious objects from American Southwest Indians. I guarantee objects that have just arrived from the Andes will lift your matchless collection of pre-Columbian art above that of any museum in the world."
"I'm anxious to see them."
"My staff has them displayed inside the tent for your pleasure," said Zolar.
"People who begin to collect scarce and uncommon objects soon become addicts, enslaved by their need to acquire and accumulate what no one else can own. Pedro Vincente was one of the Brotherhood who was driven constantly to expand his collection, one that few people knew existed."
Pedro Vincente was one of the Brotherhood who was driven constantly to expand his collection, one that few people knew existed. He was also one of the lucky ones who possessed secret, untaxed funds that could be laundered to satisfy his craving. Vincente had purchased 70% of his cherished collectibles from Zolar over 20 years. It did not bother him in the least that he often paid 5 or 10 times the true value of the objects, especially since most of them were stolen goods. The relationship was advantageous to both. Vincente laundered his drug money, and Zolar used the cash to secretly purchase and expand his ever-increasing inventory of illegal art.
"What makes the Andean artifacts so valuable?" asked Vincente, as they finished off a second glass of champagne.
"They are Chachapoyan."
"I have never seen Chachapoyan artwork."
"You have," replied Zolar. "What you are about to view was recently excavated from the lost city of the dead high in the Andes.
I hope you're not about to show me a few potsherds and burial urns," said Vincente, his anticipation beginning to dwindle. "No authentic Chachapoyan artifacts have ever come on the market." Zolar swept back the tent flap with a dramatic flourish. Feast your eyes on the greatest collection of Chachapoyan art ever assembled. In his unbridled excitement, Vincente did not notice a small glass case on a stand in one corner of the tent. He walked directly to three long tables with black velvet coverings set up in the shape of a horseshoe. One side table held only textiles, the other ceramics. The center table was set up like an exhibit in a Fifth Avenue jewelry store. The extensive array of precious handcrafted splendor stunned Vincente. He had never seen so many pre-Columbian antiquities, so rich in rarity and beauty, displayed in one place.
"This is unbelievable," he gasped. "You have truly outdone yourself."
No dealer anywhere has ever had his hands on such masterworks. Vincente went from piece to piece, touching and examining each with a critical eye. Just to feel the embroidered textiles and gold ornaments with their gemstones took Vincente's breath away. It seemed utterly incongruous that such a hoard of wealth was sitting in a cornfield in Kansas. At last he finally murmured in awe,
"So this is Chachapoyan art.
Every piece original and fully authenticated.
These treasures all came from graves?"
"Yes, tombs of royalty and the wealthy."
"Magnificent."
"See anything you like?" Zolar asked facetiously.
"Is there more?" asked Vincente,
as the excitement wore off and he began to turn his mind toward acquisition. "What you see is everything I have that is Chachapoyan.
You are not holding back any major pieces."
"Absolutely not," Zolar said with righteous resentment. "You have first crack at the entire collection. I will not sell it piecemeal. I don't have to tell you, my friend, there are five other collectors waiting in the wings for such an opportunity."
"I'll give you $4 million for the lot."
"I appreciate the richness of your initial offer, but you know me well enough to understand I never haggle. There is one price, and one price only."
"Which is?"
"$6 million. Vincente cleared several artifacts, making an open space on one table. He opened the briefcases side by side, one at a time. All were filled with closely packed stacks of high-denomination bills.
"I only brought $5 million.
Zolar was not fooled for an instant.
"A great pity I have to pass. I can't think of anyone I'd rather have sold the collection to."
"But I am your best customer," complained Vincente.
"I can't deny that," said Zolar. "We are like brothers.
I am the only man who knows of your secret activities, and you are the only one outside my family who knows mine.
Why do you put me through this ordeal every time we deal? You should know better by now."
Suddenly Vincente laughed and gave a typically Latin shrug.
"What is the use? You know I have more money than I can ever spend. Having the artifacts in my possession makes me a happy man. Forgive my bargaining habits. Paying retail was never a tradition in my family."
"Your reserve supply of cash is still in your aircraft, of course." Without a word, Vincente exited the tent and returned in a few minutes with the fourth briefcase. He set it beside the others and opened it.
$6,500,000. "You said you have some rare religious objects from the American Southwest. Are they included?"
"For the extra $500,000, you can have them," answered Zolar. "You'll find the Indian religious idols under the glass case in the corner." Vincente walked over and removed the glass dust cover. He stared at the strangely shaped, gnarled figures. These were no ordinary ceremonial idols. Although they looked as if they had been carved and painted by a young child, He was aware of their significance from long experience of collecting objects from the American Southwest.
Hopi? He asked.
No, Montolo. Very old. Very important in their ceremonial rituals. Vincente reached down and began to pick one up for a closer look. His heart skipped the next three beats, and he felt an icy shroud fall over him. The fingers of his hand did not feel as if they came in contact with the hardened root of a long-dead cottonwood tree. The idol felt more like the soft flesh of a woman's arm. Vincente could have sworn he heard it utter an audible moan.
"Did you hear that?" he asked,
thrusting the idol back in the case as if it had burned his hand. Zolar peered at him questioningly.
I didn't hear anything.
Vincente looked like a man having a nightmare. Please, my friend, let us finish our business, and then you must leave. I do not want these idols on my property.
Does that mean you don't wish to buy them? Zolar asked, surprised.
No, no, spirits are alive in those idols. I can feel their presence.
Superstitious nonsense.
Vincente grabbed Zolar by the shoulders, his eyes pleading.
Destroy them, he begged. Destroy them or they will surely destroy you.